The approval of the minutes from January 10th, reorganizational and regular meeting, February 14th, March 14th, April 14th, May 9th, June 13th, and August 8th meetings will be deferred until the October 10th, 23 in-person meeting. I'd like to open this to public comments. Any public comments? Calling once, calling twice, closing public comments. President's comments. The only comments I have is just to remind people that in October, we will be having all of our meeting in person, and we will need a quorum in order to be able to approve all of those lovely meeting notes. So if people could make sure that they schedule time to be out here, that would be great. And that's all I have. So I'm going to pass it over to the Health Officer and Director's Report.
Thank you very much.
Isn't October budget meeting too?
Yes. Give it to me. Yeah. Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining. I do have a few updates. We had an extremely busy August as far as community events goes. A few of the highlights of those include our Kenosha Community Back to School Health Fair that we had on August 10th out of Brass Elementary School. We had over 1,000 attendees at that event. We had approximately 40 to 45 vendors. This was the first time ever we attempted to give child immunizations out in the public, on the road, not with folks coming to our clinic. We were pretty successful in that for the first time. It involves a lot more organization and movement of supplies and vaccine than that we experienced during COVID. But we did provide 15 immunizations to children that were overdue. We also looked a lot of folks up who suspected that their children might be behind. And when we did that, we were able to make 12 clinic appointments for those kiddos to get their immunizations. The push for this is, for those of you who don't know, there's an exclusion date in the school system. And what will happen, quite frankly, if kiddos aren't up to date on their required vaccines to be in, or their prior immunizations to be in schools, the kids get excluded for a week. They literally get sent home. Whatever happens during that time when they get sent home, they may or may not get caught up, but they have to stay home for a week and then they can return to school. So what we're trying to do is really incentivize folks to come on out, get their vaccines. We can look them up to make sure. We had some parents say, oh, I think my kids are up to date. And actually, when we looked them up, they were overdue for one or two immunizations. So completing what we did at that health fair, we had 53 Narcan trainings conducted and Narcan kits handed out. And we handed out 664 filled backpacks for the little kids. So we felt invigorated after that and proud of our accomplishment that night. You know, in addition to the other community vendors, we had all of our other programs there. We had WIC there and food demonstrations and diaper giveaways. We also had fire and fire trucks there for the kids to play in. So overall, it was a really great success for the community. And offshoot of that is sort of last minute, we hooked up with six other school districts and attended their back to school health fairs with the same but smaller approach. We took our clinic and were look up for immunizations to their health fairs and were able to connect kids or parents with overdue immunizations. So we took a littler approach. We didn't actually give the immunizations bare, but we went to Brass and of course Brass and Frank in the KUSD school district. And then west of the interstate, we went to Bristol, Salem Lakes, and Silver Lake schools. Those are really all smaller but successful events, and we're going to try to hit more of them upcoming as school begins again next year. Any questions about any of that? Okay. Our Kenosha County Thrive Action Team meetings are, we have one more left. It's more of a celebratory meeting and a kickoff to our three independent teams beginning their journey of meeting at a frequency that's yet to be determined by each team, but we've come up with action items, and we've had a steering committee meeting, and we'll have more to update next time, but we have done the groundwork and are ready to set the teams forward on continued work throughout the next several years. I guess the other thing, the other big event that was held in Kenosha County in August was the Kenosha County Fair. We had, we were there two shifts, noon to four and four to eight, giving out Narcan and Narcan training. And we provided 256 community members with Narcan training at the fair. So that was very successful as well. Two other items. The opioid settlement advisory panel is a panel that was set up for settlement funds that we'll be receiving for several years, millions of dollars for the opioid settlement. I attended a meeting in August, and I asked for a piece of lab instrumentation called the Pro-E. And what this instrument does is it allows us to test for fentanyl when we're screening clientele for treatment. So in essence, something that has happened more recently than not is our MAT clientele, so our medication-assisted treatment folks who are receiving Vivitrol once a month. We do pre-screening on them. We do urinalysis pre-screening on them to assure that they don't have any thing in their system that might counteract with the Vivitrol that we give. If that screening is clear, we can go ahead and give the Vivitrol. The complication that has arisen is that we don't know if fentanyl has been laced with anything that's in their system, and they may not know that either. And so we had a case where we put a client into withdrawals simply because we could not screen for fentanyl. And he had admitted to taking methadone, but that's when we knew that, and when we screened for it, he was still, it was still okay for us to give the Vivitrol. What we found out later on is it was laced with fentanyl on the client, and we didn't know that. So this piece of equipment that I asked for and was approved to use opioid settlement funding for from the advisory panel is called a Pro-E. It will allow us to screen for fentanyl at the point of care, meaning in the clinic. Right now, we have no ability to screen for fentanyl other than doing a screening and sending it out for a two-week confirmatory test, which is just too long. So this is the first step in getting our lab and our clinic the right equipment that we really need to determine if because almost every drug these days is laced with fentanyl. So we really need to get up to speed. The second thing that will help us tremendously in the future is to get a more expensive piece of equipment called the LCMS. It's a liquid chromatography unit that will allow our lab and our clinic to test at point of care or in the lab for fentanyl. So all of our programs that we do, our urinalysis screenings for treatment court, DCFS, the Vivitrol program, the MAT program, Veterans Affairs, and there's one more. This piece of equipment, if we can get it eventually, and I'm working on tactics, it's about a $400,000 piece of equipment. I'm currently working on tactics with that, will allow us to test any of these UAs for any of the other agencies that we test for fentanyl, and we would have an immediate during the day, that day response. So when I went to the opioid settlement advisory panel, I did explain that piece as well. The question will be is that the right use of those funds, or do we try to find it somewhere else? So, but if we're successful, that will certainly cover our ability, and it may even be a profitable thing for us that we could use our laboratory for other counties who don't have either labs or don't have that level of sophistication, because we do an awful lot of forensic testing for departments, Sheriff's Department, and of course, all the other agencies that I just listed. Last but not least, we have our epidemiologist, Dan, here. He has been working in conjunction with our behavioral health with our behavioral health community members, as well as the Kenosha County Substance Abuse and Coalition Task Force on some work. And he's also been working an internal dashboard for us. So he is here to show us some of his more recent work that he's done. And we haven't showed him off too much. He's really good at what he does and has the equipment to do his work. And I told him it was, you know, now that we're out of COVID, it was time for him to demonstrate and show us the good work that he does in other areas. So with that, I'll hand it over to Dan. Before he starts, guys, is there any questions about anything that I should have asked this, but anything that I just reported on? No? Okay. All right, thank you.
Second here. Hey, everybody. Good afternoon. As Larry said, I'm Dan, the epidemiologist for Kenosha County Public Health, and here to share this labor of love, work in progress here. We've called it various things, the executive dashboard, executive overview dashboard, demographic dashboard. Basically what it is, what we're trying to do is take all the data in the that we have available in the county as well as just across different programs in our department and kind of put it into this centralized location where we can kind of query it. And if we want to ask questions about trends, about demographic trends or trends over time, we can quickly kind of get some answers. And so I'll just run through a couple examples here of kind of how it works. So let's say I'm interested in some communicable disease data. So I go up here to the filters area, select communicable disease. Let's say I'm specifically interested in sexually transmitted diseases. And then so when I kind of put those initial two filters in, you can see a few different trends. Again, this is, you know, by this date range, which is selected right here, but you can see counts of chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, as well as general trends over time, monthly counts here on the right. And then you can see it broken down by demographic variables like gender, race, and ethnicity, as well as age group. Now, the nice thing about this Tableau software that we're using here in these dashboards is each of these views is also a filter. So let's say I'm only interested in chlamydia data. I can click right there and all the other views will refresh, and you can kind of see, you know, you subset the data by that additional filter of just chlamydia. Or for example, just if I was just interested in sexually transmitted diseases among the female population in the county, again, the views would refresh and you can kind of see trends and trends within trends. For example, if I was interested in seeing, like, you know, obviously the highest offender here is chlamydia over the years, but if you were to look at the, like, above 50 crowd, it actually, see, gonorrhea has higher rates of infection among that group, for example. And then, so that's just one area. Another one could be opioid-related stats. If I go and select opioid-related under that first filter option, and then countywide stats. Let's see. So again, you can kind of see, you know, what the highest numbers of types of incidents are. So EMS runs, emergency department visits, and deaths. Now this death data is not accurate. I actually only subsetted that on the 2022 data when I put it in there. So don't believe the numbers here exactly, but just to kind of demonstrate the power of putting the data together like this. So kind of, yeah, any kind of trend related or demographic related question that we might have, we'll hopefully be able to come up with answers pretty quickly here with this dashboard. And that's basically what I've got so far. And There will be more, you know, data areas that are kind of going to be imported into this. Like, I'm working on implementing it so that we can get the Cori data in here, so we can kind of see number of runs that we're doing, different things about like time of day that we're going on our runs, or what success rates are at different times of day. Just every, you know, potential aspect that could be explored, I'm trying to incorporate into this view and other views. So that's where things are at. Let me know if there's any questions I can answer. I can't really, I don't actually have my microphone.
Anybody have questions?
Not a question, just a comment that it's always really good to have multiple ways to analyze the data. It's good to have the data. We can have ideas about what's going on, but
yeah,
seeing that I have a son who's a data scientist, I always appreciate having the data here in front of me and seeing the different graphs, because that's really important, because we can have perception, and perception and data can be completely skewed. So that's really good. Thank you for coming, and thank you for creating all of these different
I have a question
for us, and somebody has a question. So if we can
How do we address the male propensity to have all of these challenges?
Can you repeat that just a little louder for us?
Okay. Because looking at this at these graphs here, it seems as if the male population have more problems with the opioid and by race, you know. How do we address that?
How do we address the issues as we're looking at who's having the problems?
Right. Yeah. And just before answering that question, I just want to add one other caveat. So you can see that, like, in terms of number of incidents, opioid incidents, it is highest among the white non-Hispanic population group. But that is really a reflection of the demographic makeup of the county. If you look at rates, which I'm working on incorporating, being able to view the rates in here as well, you would see that flip. It's actually, if you look at, like, I think it's deaths and EMS runs alone, like, each of those is actually highest among the African-American community in the county. So that's something that still has to be kind of put in here. But I don't know if Laura, you want to take that.
Yeah, we actually have several different projects between behavioral health and the health department that we're currently working on, some individualized to both departments and some are actually meshed with each other. But our SAMHSA grant is specific to opioid overdose and treatment and prevention. So some of the things that I listed in my report, all of our Narcan trainings that we're doing, getting Narcan out into the communities that can prevent an overdose if we get to the client on time and recognize that something is wrong. Our Cori overdose response team that is funded by the SAMHSA grant as well responds to overdoses that have successful saved overdoses in the community that we get through our partnership with Kenosha Fire Department and EMS. So any EMS runs that the fire department has, we have a contract with them and peer support from Oakwood and our Cori team, they go in conjunction with each other and go to the survivor's home, offering treatment options, education, connections to the community, if in fact that community member is ready for treatment. There is also our Cori team, in addition to that, runs an overdose fatality review meeting on a monthly basis.
Every other month.
That has been paused for a bit as we got our Cori team up and running and some other things we're readjusting. But that is a particular group of community members, approximately 30 community members, fire, PD, EMS, sheriff, hospitals, Dan, some of our public health staff and behavioral health staff attend. And what we do is we pick an opioid fatality case to review and as a community discuss and that the focus really is to identify any gaps that we could perhaps improve upon if we had a situation like that next time. So that's a few examples of what we're doing and why we're out in the community so much, especially with our Narcan training and Narcan prevention efforts.
Thank you very much.
Does that make sense?
That answers question.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
It does. I appreciate it.
Okay. Leanne, if there's not anything else for Dan, we'll move along to action and advocacy, please. Thank you.
So this is a report from the WCHC and WellDev Policy Advocacy Committee. All of the bills that we looked at in August were all draft bills. They all have the phrase LRB in front of them, and that means they're in draft form. So we could only support them, not support them, or have no action. So LRB 4027, we voted to support, which was to create a state universal vaccine purchasing program. And so that would allow Wisconsin, to be a universal vaccine purchasing state, which we are not currently. So purchasing vaccines in the other fashion that we already do is inefficient and can lead to higher prices for some vaccines and a lower dosage availability. So we're looking at becoming a universal vaccine purchasing state. But like I said, this is just a draft bill right now.
And vaccines, just a point of reference, the vaccines that that this covers is immunization.
Correct.
Yes. So we're not talking COVID vaccine. We're talking about all the other required back to school vaccines.
Yes. So all of these things that I'm going to cover are all for back to school vaccines. I think they're just in preparation for a lot of the immunization draft bills kind of came our way.
Yes. Yes.
We voted to take
I'm sorry, it's Rita. Hi, Rita. Hi. Does that affect VFC vaccines then?
It should. So I believe it should, yes.
The same way? You would still obtain those the same way, or would you be under a different program?
I don't know if that's yet determined.
Yeah, since this is just in a draft bill form, I think they're just putting these ideas out there to see what will catch. I mean, honestly, the note that I have is these bills will most likely not receive a hearing because they were put forward by Democrats in a Republican-run legislation.
Oh.
So I'm just reporting what we have, but this is probably not going to move any forward.
And quite frankly, I haven't heard. I'm a part of the Southeastern Region Health Officers. We meet every other week, and I haven't heard anything about this. So it's at the higher level.
And it's very, very draft form right now. If it gets traction, then I'll report on that as well.
And again, I want
thank us, you.
And I want us to keep in a frame of mind that these are required immunizations. That we're talking about.
I hope I'm not confusing everyone.
No.
Okay. So then the next one was LRB 3881. We chose to not take action on this right now and just to kind of see what happened with it. This is on vaccination of minors without parental consent. So it would allow a minor 16 years of age or older to make their own decisions regarding vaccination. And what they put in the bill was there's evidence that when given complete information and control over their preventative medical care, teenagers will decide to receive some or all vaccinations that their parents previously withheld. Like I said, another draft bill. We voted to support LRB 3882, which is eliminating personal conviction exemption from immunizations. And then the other thing that's not immunization related is the tobacco. So it's another draft bill. So LRB 3416, we were asked just this week, we all voted just on the computer to consider joining in opposition to an effort to weaken our smoke-free air laws in Wisconsin. So there's a draft bill for co-sponsorship right now that's just coming out. And this bill would weaken Wisconsin's smoke-free air law by allowing cigar and pipe tobacco smoking in so-called tobacco bars, and that's in quotes. The current law defines a tobacco bar as a tavern that generates 15% or more of its annual gross income from the sale of cigars and pipe tobacco. This proposed law would allow cigar and pipe smoking in any bar that meets the definition of a tobacco bar. So we voted to oppose this if it goes any further. So I'll keep you posted on that one. That's it.
Any questions, anybody?
Thank you. Okay, there is no Corporation Council report. Do we have any other businesses authorized by law? Calling once, calling twice. Okay, for closing board comments, I just have a quick comment. For our records, we do have someone logged into the virtual meeting who's not listed by name. We aren't sure if you are a board member or the press or a concerned citizen or who you are. So could people please look at their screens and let us know who guest number two is? Anybody? Guest number two, could you give us who you are? Okay. All right. We just need to know if you're a board member so that we can write it down. If you're
This is Rita.
Yeah.
This is Rita. I do not see my name anywhere. Am I showing up as guest number
two? You are showing up. You are showing up as a guest. And then we have somebody else showing up as simply guest. So it's no big deal. Yeah, no, it's not you. I don't think it's you, Ola. It's no big deal. We'll figure it out. We just wanted to give credit to people since we do have an attendance policy for the board members. If we have a board member who is present but not showing up with a name, we just wanted to double check that, you know, we don't give you a check mark saying that you were not here. Okay. Well, I guess it's either the press or a concerned citizen or something, but you're welcome at any time. And we love having people come and listen to all the wonderful things that we are doing. If I do not have any other comments by the board, last call for that for the board. Nothing. Okay, then in that case, I will call the meeting adjourned at 12:27. Thank you for coming and we'll see you all in person next month.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.